Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we have a lot on tap for you today. I actually want to begin with what we're doing tomorrow to get you ready for that celebration. Tomorrow is George Floyd's birthday. And across the nation, there's going to be a national teach-in around critical race theory, around African-American history, around social justice, equity, and equality. So on our show tomorrow, we're going to participate in this event. We're going to spend some time talking about what is happening around the country when it comes to social justice, when it comes to equality and equity. That is tomorrow's show. So be prepared for that honest conversation that we're going to facilitate right here on Today with Dr. K. Today, we want to talk about a few items. As you know, this is the week of the celebration of the International Day of Girls, which of course extends to women. That was earlier in the week. We want to get into the hypersexualization of our girls and our women. Do we hold celebrities, media figures, authors, poets, athletes, do we hold them accountable for the ways in which our society sexualizes girls and women? I was looking on spending some time with Mika Kendall's book, so her book on hood feminism. And in that book, she talks about the hypersexualization of girls, the adultification of girls that happens. And she's making the argument that when we are talking about rape and assault and harassment, that we don't just point fingers at the rapist. That in her book, Hood Feminism, Notes from a Woman from the Women That a Movement Forgot, she's saying we have to also hold society accountable. That if we really want to get into understanding the hypersexualization of girls and young women, we have to understand that the only way that we can get to the bottom of this is beginning to take a hard look at the ways in which society frames how we see girls and women. And it is because of this framing that we then have these incidences of harassment, of assault, that then in some cases lead to rape. That when you look at the hypersexualization of girls, we have to start there. Before we get to the hypersexualization of women, we got to start with the hypersexualization of girls. That the sexual development of our girl children that is being hijacked by this culture of hypersexualization. And if we lay that on the table and we talk about how we begin to frame girls as women and then begin to depict them as sexual objects, it means that sexuality is inappropriately imposed on our girls through the media, through marketing, through products that are directly aimed at encouraging them to act in adult sexual ways. Here's some clear examples. Thongs being marketed to six-year-old girls. Hear me when I tell you. Ads of young girls in sexy poses. Girls dressing up and dancing porn style to their favorite pop stars' very adult lyrics. If you just do a Google search of hypersexualization of girls, tons of examples will come up. I say let's just start with TikTok and IG. I am often surprised, nay, I may be even shocked. I am not a prude, but I am sometimes shocked at how sexualized the behavior of young girls is portrayed when they're doing certain TikTok or IG dance challenges. And I just wonder what adult finds that to be appropriate enough to videotape it and then put it on social media. Maybe I'm being a prude. Maybe the ways in which I see children is dated. Maybe it's not a big thing, but I think it is. And as we celebrate International Girls' Day, I think we should spend some time investigating how girls are portrayed. The sexualization of girls is actually linked to common mental health problems in girls and women, including eating disorders, low self-esteem, and depression. That because girls see themselves in very sexualized images, in advertising, in merchandising, and in media, it is harmful to their self-image and to their healthy development. Girls are not women and therefore should not be treated as such. Girls are not women and therefore should not be framed as such. Girls are not women, therefore they should not be in thongs. They should not be dancing and going down to the floor. If you love it, then you should have put a ring on it. That maybe we can talk about why it is important to allow our girls to be girls. That we blame society for the adultification of our girls. We know that research shows that white America ages black children anywhere from 5 to 7 years. Therefore, they'll see Tamir Rice, who was 12, the police officer who showed up and shot him in 1.67 seconds said, oh, I thought he was 20. If you listen to the audio recordings of people who called in to the police station to report Tamir, the first couple of calls were, there's this grown man in the park with a gun, that he was not seen as a child. We know that's played out in the media. Our children are dealing with adultification. In the white community, they're infantilized, right? So they're made younger than what they were. We talk about Dylan Storm Roof, the white guy that went into a black church, prayed with the black folks for an hour, and then stood up and shot 9 people and killed them. In fact, held a gun on one elderly mother, one of our aunties, and said, I'm going to keep you alive so you can tell the story. When they talked about Dylan Storm Roof in the newspaper, when they talked about him in media, when they put the bulletproof vest on him and offered him Burger King in case he was hungry, they talked about him and called him a boy. I'm like, dude, he's over 21 years old. He's a grown man. Tamir Rice was a boy. And Tamir Rice was innocent with the toy gun in the park, but he's dead, and Dylan Storm Roof is alive and well and kicking in some prison. They said he gets anywhere from 500 to 700 pieces of mail per week from his fan club. You know what? That's where the problem is. When we start talking about the adultification of our children, I am wondering, and this is my question on the table here, at least one of them, are we to blame for the hypersexualization of our girls? Now, let me just say, now, y'all, I may be touching some buttons today because I'm going to talk about some of your favorite celebrities, and that's fine. I think we can all enjoy Lizzo. We can. But should we have our girls emulate Lizzo and the dress where her butt cheeks were out? I'm just saying. Should we have our girls watching, I don't know, Beyonce video? Oh, no, even better, Cardi B. And what's it, Megan Thee Stallion? Should we have our children listening to WAP and then doing the dance? I'm asking, are we to blame for the hypersexualization of our girls? Therefore, when our girls are then dealing with low self-esteem, they're dealing with depression, they're dealing with high rates of suicide or suicidal thoughts, we want to know why. Maybe the why can be answered, at least in part, by this. An APA, that's the American Psychological Association, their task force on the sexualization of girls, they did a study. And they said, and this is, I want to get to your calls, 410-319-8888. They examined every form of media. And they said that girls, our girls, I'm talking specifically about black and brown girls, are hypersexualized, or they're kind of portrayed as if they're animalistic when it comes to media. When it comes to television, music videos, music lyrics, magazines, movies, video games, and the internet. In all of those mediums, they found that there is a multiple amount. Like, you're talking about multiplicity. It's just tons of videos, photographs of young girls, young black and brown girls, hypersexualized. I'm just wondering, okay, we can talk about the companies. I want to talk about us as parents, because aren't we supposed to be the ones who determine what our children listen to and what they watch? Or aren't we supposed to be the guardian at the gate of our house? Are we not supposed to be the catcher in the rye at the bottom of the hill to make sure our children don't fall off? That's the whole idea. If you go back and you read Catcher in the Rye, who's catching children to make sure they don't get lost? I'm saying that should be us. And if we are participating in the hypersexualized behavior of our girls, then aren't we to blame? Because I've seen some pictures, I've seen the dances, and I'm a little bit concerned. Or maybe I'm making too much of it. Maybe it's not a big deal. Maybe we just let girls be girls. Maybe girls are little women. I don't think so. I was always taught girls are girls. And then when you grow up, you become a woman. Girls are not little women, as the book would have you to believe. They are not. Therefore, they should not be treated as such. Is there a space for our girls to have their childhood? Now, I want to read something Zora Simone said, and I'm going to go to Susan and Miss Kim. Zora Simone on Facebook Live said, when she talked about the hypersexualization of African-American girls and women, she's making the argument, as are a lot of people, Zora, that it stems from slavery. Let's not forget, I'm going to put a pin in Zora for a second and just remind you of a historical piece of information, right? Let's not forget that during slavery, 13-year-old girls were considered to be breeding machines. Let's be very clear that when the plantation owner was talking about building his economic empire, it was being built through the wombs of girls and not of women. Now, hear me out when I tell you. You get a 13-year-old girl, you can impregnate her every single year. By the time she's 18, 19 years old, they said her womb would have dropped by that point because she's been forced to have children every year. 13-year-old girls were positioned as women. Zora Simone goes on, white men in the system of white supremacy created the narrative of African-American women being hypersexual. Think about Jezebel, the hypersexualization of women, and let's go back and girls. 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds. We want to get a young black girl so we can build our economic empire on our womb. Are we still participating in that? Dr. Mia White says here on Facebook Live, you can't disaggregate white supremacy from capitalism, patriarchy, and misogynoir. We have inherited too much. That is our inheritance. So how do we reject it? Or are we participating in it? I know I'm coming back to that WAP song. I don't have a problem with WAP with the dogs. Let me tell you, sisters, you of age, you do whatever you want in your house, in your car, on your job. I could care less. You are free. You have body autonomy. I'm talking about when I hear 13-year-olds singing WAP and dancing to it. When I hear 15-year-olds dancing to it. When I see thongs being sold to 6-year-olds. When I see young girls looking like women on IG and TikTok dancing in sexualized manners. I'm like, do you even know what they're doing? Or did some adult teach them this and they think it's funny to have our children, your daughter, your sister, your cousin, your niece, your grandchild acting in this way? 410-319-8888. Let's start with Susan from Baltimore. Susan, how are you?
Glad you brought this topic up, and I'm glad that we have you as a platform, because if you and people like you go away, we don't hear that. We don't have that. So it's like they're molding the society, their brain. It's a whole lot involved. It's like common sense isn't common. People's morals are gone. You know how they say this country is going to hell in a handbasket?
Yes.
I really believe that. But no, I don't think you're making too much of it. And yes, I think it goes back to back when slavery times. That's the first thing I thought about when you said it. But it also goes to now, the here and now, and the people that, like you say, you police your children and all that. But you know, when they go out of the house, you don't have any control, but you can control what they have and do when they are around you. So my thing is this. I think it all started back, and I blame a lot of it on music, because right. There used to be a saying, art imitates life.
Right.
And now it's like life is imitating art, and it's just so backwards. And I'm like, what? I remember that the lady, the president, well, he was a president, his wife, Gore, he was vice president. His wife going out against, what was the group? It was a rap group back then, and they went to court and everything because of their lyrics. So they were real explicit. And I remember the first gangster rap, that's when it all started. It's a lot involved. It's crack, it's all of that started. The gangster rap, and then the boys. Oh, you know who I'm talking about, Dr. K. Two Live Crew.
There you go. I was going to say Two Live Crew, because what Tipper Gore was going after was this idea that she said her 11-year-old daughter was listening to Two Live Crew, and
okay.
It got her concerned. That shows you how power works, right?
Yes. So fast forward to now, and it's like ever since then, the music industry is like it's controlling our children, what they think, what they see, what they wear. Like you say, the celebrities, yes. And I've heard about that song, WAP, but I've never heard it. I never heard the song, and I don't choose to listen to it, but I read about it and how it's supposed to be, and I think they performed it on some kind of award show. But yeah, I remember growing up in the 70s, all our kids were, well, the most explicit one was Little Sally Walker. And now you see them out here, they grinding, they pumping on the ground. And I mean, it's just, my heart breaks. And this is the last thing I'm going to say about the psyche of it all for our girls. My grandson goes on this on TikTok all the time. So one day I just picked his phone up and went through it. So I'm looking at all the different things. Then this little young black girl comes on, and she couldn't be more than 9 or 10. And she said, what she had on is some ribbons or something. And I shared with her, do you like me? Hit yes.
Oh, that's
concerning.
And then
all these people started hitting no. Some people were checking yes, but very few. And they were telling her she was like a dark brown skinned girl. Pretty, beautiful. You ugly and this, that, and the third. It's everything is a hot mess. And we need you and voices like you and people that have morals and concerns to step up and stand up to this. I mean, it's a big machine. It's the industry. It's a lot involved. So
okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Right.
Thank you so much, Susan. Susan was taking us back to a time when they first started, which believe it or not was 30 years ago. 30 years ago, roughly. You know, I think it's 32 to be exact, but 30 to 32 years ago when they first started putting the parental advisory sticker on music. Remember that? Now, for those of you of a certain age, you probably do remember Two Live Crew. And here's one that's going to get you that was one of the big ones that Tipper Gore went after. Two Live Crew was a part of it, but the biggest one she went after was Prince's song, Darling Nikki. That was her problem. She was like, oh my word, my 11-year-old daughter is singing and talking about female I don't want to say the word, but it's about a female pleasuring herself. So this idea of Darling Nikki was also a song that she went after. Now maybe this notion of the hypersexualization of girls is not new. Maybe I'm too late for this, but I feel like it's gotten worse. And what we're seeing with this hypersexualization of girls today, that we're seeing a direct impact of the hypersexualization of girls on the self-esteem that girls have. I think that is where we need to figure out, where do we go with this, and why is it important when girls are starting to see themselves as less than because of it? 410-319-8888. Miss Kim is on the phone. Miss Kim, how are you?
That's okay.
Thanks
how
for calling.
You?
I'm doing well.
Thank you. I'm riding down the Beltway, and I happened to put the channel and came to your program today. This is my second time calling, but I had to call in or try to get
Thank
in.
You.
This subject here, and just listening to it, absolutely makes you sick. I don't know what all the answers are, to be honest, but I do know that there are answers to putting this situation into check. And I believe that it starts at home. I think that we've gotten to a point where the inward part, the internal structure of our families have been damaged. And I think it's time that we take a moment to really pay attention to children and just what's going on. I see a lot of selfishness in adults and parents. I have participated in rearing over 200 children and young people. And I can honestly tell you, I have never seen the state or condition of children in my entire lifetime. And I'm 61 years old.
Mm.
It makes you sick to your stomach, but here's what I mean. This is what I want to say. We know that there's problems. I'm not seeing enough parents and enough people involved in communities, by communities, by communities. Years ago, everything that we did as young people was structured around our block, our community. And you had extended parents, extended family members, uncles, the next door neighbors, whoever. These people were all your parents. In this structure today, if you say something to someone's child, they want to kill you, shoot you, or threaten you, or some kind of craziness. But I think it goes back to the adult. And that's where we need to look to. I'm available, and I don't know really how to put this out. I don't want to give out my telephone number. But I'm interested in meeting with parents who are like-minded as Susan. And to begin to really look at this matter, not so much for complaints and what is wrong, but to offer the solutions and to put things in place to begin to tackle this issue. If it's not tackled now, what we will see in the future generations will be something beyond anything that we've ever even dreamed of in our lifetime, and especially when we were coming up as young girls. So
what I'm going to do, Ms. Kim, is I'm going to have you hold on. I'm going to have them get your phone number, because if there are other people who want to connect with you, we can connect you in that way. Folks, we're going to hold it here just for 1 minute. When we come back, we have Tyrone, Diya, and David on the phone. Let's keep going with the conversation, because I'd like to hear from you as well. When we come back, I got some more statistics to share with you about what happens with the hypersexualization of girls and why it is something we should all be concerned about. Let's stay with the conversation when we return. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, today we're just having a conversation about the hypersexualization of our girls. Three things that happen as a result of this with the research in terms of how does it negatively affect girls and young women across a variety of health domains. Number one, it affects them in their cognitive and emotional consequences. So the sexualization and objectification undermine a person's confidence in and comfort with their own body, leading to emotional and self-image problems such as shame and anxiety, the cognitive and emotional consequences. Second, it affects their mental and physical health. Research links sexualization with three of the most common mental health problems diagnosed in girls and women that I mentioned earlier: eating disorders, low self-esteem, and depression or depressed mood. And finally, sexual development. Research suggests that the sexualization of girls has negative consequences on a girl's ability to develop a healthy sexual self-image. Are we to blame? Is it something that we are doing? Are we participating in this hypersexualization of our girls? Zora Simone chimes in, like the same type of thing happens in terms of hypersexualization with Asian American girls as well. I have some tips for you as we're going through the conversation of what parents can do. I want to talk more about that as we continue. Let's start with Tyrone, Diya, Dave, Irvin, and Derek. Tyrone, how are you?
Yes, they left out one thing. The hypersexualization of girls would also lead to unwanted pregnancies. Very important point they left out. But they're correct otherwise with everything else they said. I'm the father of a woman. She didn't have any unwanted pregnancies because I treated her like a girl. When she was a girl, she dressed like a girl. I expected her to behave like a girl, and I didn't expose her to a whole lot of sexuality. And the movies we watched, or whatever, you know, they were movies for girls. They weren't movies for women that I would take. You know what I'm saying? So I think the key is that, and what you're called alluded to is, it's the adults. A lot of times we fail these children, and we got to learn how to act like adults. Can't always be your child's friend. In other words, I was not my child's friend. I had a young lady and, I have a young lady and two young adult men now. They're all doing fine. But I did not, pretend to be their friend. I was their parent first. And that's right. The way we kept it. And they turned out to be doing quite well as young adults so far. I'm very proud of them. Thank you for your time.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much. To add to something that our caller said when he was talking about where we are with this, it's a problem with society. It goes beyond, according to Dr. Mia Charlene White, she's like, look, it goes beyond the landscape of parental control. Like, when we start talking about this push and pull of society and what it means to have our children act in a certain way, we have to understand that we are fighting against a boulder that is on this hill rolling towards our children, seeking to control them. I want to ask you a question, then I'll go to Diya, David, and Derek. When is the last time, parents, I'm just going to ask and be honest, just be honest with yourself. When is the last time you picked up your child's phone without telling them you were going to pick it up and go through it, and you went through to see what they were watching, what they were listening to, and even more important, hear me, what they were sending out. Hear me. They have found that the sexting habits of teenagers has increased in our society. 25 to 35% of adolescents have sent out sext. Now, we know what a text message is. A sext message is a picture of themselves in some type of sexualized way. Either they don't have a shirt on, they don't have pants on, they don't have underwear on. They've sent that out over the wire to somebody's phone. They've sent it and they've received it. When is the last time, I'm asking parents of children under the age of 18, when is the last time you picked up your child's phone without saying, I'm going to take your phone? No, just take it out of their hands and take a look at it to see what they are watching, what they are reading, what they are listening to, and what they are sending out. Here's something I think is going to stop you in your tracks. They're saying now that the biggest consumers of pornography, 14-year-old boys watching and downloading pornography of women and girls on their phone. Last time you grab the phone, I'm encouraging you to do that today. We have Diya on the phone, Diya and then David. Hi, Diya.
Hi.
Thank you for calling.
Hi, that's because it's actually Dia.
Hey, Dia.
Hi, I was calling to say, I agree with the lady that said before, Miss Kim.
Yes. Yes, dear? Oh, dear. Dear's from the Itty Bitty Fan Club. Dear, call back. We lost you. Hey, folks, let me add on something with the 14-year-old boys and pornography. They found that when they asked girls across the planet how many of them saw themselves as beautiful, only 11% of girls saw themselves as beautiful. One-third of all 11-year-olds in Japan, just as an example, experienced low body confidence. Here in America, we have 81% of girls, with the vast majority of them being black and brown girls, 10 years old, who believe that they are fat and that nobody will ever want them. 10 years old, you already think you're fat. You already don't think anybody wants you. 14-year-old boys downloading pornography. I'm just saying that last time you took your kid's phone, like, do you know what they're listening to? Do you know what they're sending out? It should cause you great concern. I know I used to take my son's phone. Hey, let's take a look and see what's going on. What you watching? What you looking at? Who you talking to? What are you sending out? What are you receiving? Why? Because it's not just that we want to guard them against where their heart is going to go. I'm also concerned about adult men who are sending out text messages to little girls. Let's be very clear. It is happening. Adult man, I'm talking to you. Over the age of 18, if they're under the age of 18, then truly you should not be sending any kind of communication to them. And this is for boys and women as well. I'm just saying, we're the parents. We should be the catchers in the rye. We have David on the phone, then Coley, then Kanika. David, how are you?
This is for boys and women as well. I'm just saying, we're the parents.
David, are you with us?
We should be the catchers in the rye.
All right, David, let's go to Coley. Coley, how are you?
Good.
Coley, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, your voice is a little low, sir.
I said, I'm right here. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that, like, you know what I mean, have any, like, you know, believe in faith for the Bible of God, like, it's already predicted these times we're going to live in. You know what I mean? Just like, I don't hear no one talking about the agenda they're pushing for the gayness. Like, I understand people don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. You know what I mean? But whereas though, like, with the Deja Fell demonstration, whereas though you can talk about killing a person, I kill your mother in the third, but you can't hurt a gay person's feeling, or they cut, or they cancel you. Here's the thing, whereas though they got nowadays kids shows is promoting homosexuality. It was even a teacher that put up a gay pride flag and had kids salute that. And this is like a month and a half ago. But no one wants to talk about the agenda that everyone is pushing with this, the LGBTQ or whatever it is, community.
Okay, so thank you very much, Coley. All right, folks, so okay, but I'm just trying to figure out how connecting it to the LGBTQIA community is connected to this bigger issue around the hypersexualization of girls and women. This is a worldwide crisis. I don't know about what you said, somebody put up a flag and made them salute it. I don't know anything about that. I'm specifically focused on this hypersexualization that we're seeing. But we are going to take a look at what Coley said. We will get back to that. Now, just to follow up on this hypersexualization, a caller a little while back said, look, hey, it leads to, you know, pregnancy. Okay, hold on. Before we go there, let me tell you what the research shows it leads to. Dating violence, domestic violence, rape on campus, and sex trafficking, where girls are being assaulted and exploited. So when we talk about the hypersexualization, you can only go forward to look to traffic, sex traffic young girls. You have positioned them as women. Let's not get off course here. I'm just saying, let's not get off course. What we're talking about is a hypersexualization of girls that then become women. And we're talking about the real mental impact of this on the psyche of a young girl. I don't know why this is a subject that people don't want to talk about. Let's not get off course. This is something we need to deal with. See, whenever I talk about people push back, like, no, 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 I love Beyonce. No, I love Lizzo. No, no, I love, you know, WAP. I love Cardi B. I love Megan Stone. You're an adult. I'm not talking about you. I'm saying, why is your daughter riding along singing these looks? You just think it's music. You know what it is, folks? Here's where the other battleground is. I talked yesterday that when it comes to race and white supremacy, the biggest battleground is the hearts and minds of people. Because that's what you're trying to change, right? We're trying to change hearts and minds. What does the media want from our children? They are trying to grow them as consumers. That's what they're trying to do. Hypersexualizing our girls sets up a society that allows what we see happening with hashtag MeToo, girls as being seen as less than, and it actually helps to benefit those in power. Why is it that we still live in a culture, yes, I'm going to wrap it back around to this, where women are still being paid less than men? You think it's just because it's politics. No, no, no. It's because they see us as nothing more than sexual beings here to be barefoot and pregnant in the kitchen getting their plate. Yeah, I'm going there. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Kanika. Kanika, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. I am so glad you are having this topic. It's a conversation that I have with my daughter, because she hangs around when we're out. She, you know, she's around children that may be in her age range or younger. And we don't live in each other's houses. So when I begin to tell my daughter what hypersexual is, and she doesn't understand, or sexuality and how is embedded into the songs that they're listening to and they're TikTok into, you have to understand. I tell her you have to understand that you bring it at home, and then if I'm listening to the music and you're chanting the words and I'm just hearing the beat, and then I'm listening to the words and you know all the words, more words than I do, I might have to go back and start listening to this music where I have to censor it from my radio or censor it from in my house and check these phones and check these tablets. Because you don't know what the children are listening to. And furthermore, when my daughter went to camp this summer, she was fine with a group of children that she was there. But when new children rotate out and some come in, she was introduced to a young man, and he introduced himself by calling himself Pimp C. It's a child. He called himself Pimp C. What does that even mean? You know? And I asked her not to exchange Instagram information because she has a professional page. And she did anyway. The little boy took her picture from off of her Instagram, snapped a picture, and started sharing it with his friend.
Come on.
It's not the prerogative that was going on with her picture. It's just a point that this is what these children are doing. And the things that he was saying inside of the chat. If we don't check up on our children, my daughter's age ranges from 10 to 12 years old. So we're not checking on our children. Somebody else is coming into their life and exposing them to all kinds of things. So we have to be on top of that, because we are the parents. They are the children. Whether we like it or not, and you sit back and we get with our friends and we can't have a conversation about sexuality, hypersexual, around our children, the next thing you know, exactly what you said, Dr. K, your research is awesome because it does not lie. These children will be trafficked.
Yes, they are.
These children will be out here raped. These children that are out here will be out here massaged by these parents and these groups of
being groomed.
Out here. We got to be careful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kanika. Hey, here's something, folks, that I'm just going to throw out here, okay? Since we're talking and we're being real here, and we know we're having an adult conversation here, so if you have your kiddos on the phone listening, we're having an adult conversation, a very real conversation. I always wonder when I think about R. Kelly, seriously, I wonder, where were the parents? You know, did nobody see R. Kelly show up at the high school and knew that he was a 20-something, 30-something-year-old man? But see, it's okay because we hypersexualize our girls. So if you're 13 with a 30-year-old man, it's not a big deal. And actually, It is. Now, here's something I think is real interesting about America. America hypersexualizes girls like they're little women, but they don't celebrate when the body goes through a transition to be a woman. Hear me. We are one of the few cultures where we don't celebrate when a girl gets her menses, when her body is actually changing and she is becoming a woman. Now, she can become a woman biologically. Doesn't mean she's emotionally a woman. She's mentally a woman. She's biologically a woman. That's why it's important. Listen, when moms and grandmas and aunties need to come around young girls when they get their menses to help them understand that biologically you are a woman, but mentally, emotionally, you are not. You are not a woman. Your body has changed, but you're not a woman. Let me tell you what we do in this society, and this is where we really need to get to. We hypersexualize. We sing WAP. We get thongs for our six-year-old. We dress them up, you know, like they're little rape victims for Halloween, like it's no big deal, right? But then when they get their menses, girls say that what they've been told when they get their menses, that they are an embarrassment, that they're dirty, that they're gross. And it results in young girls feeling shame and anxiety. See, this is what happens. You can't hypersexualize on one end and then make them feel dirty and gross when their body's changing on the other end. That is a dichotomy that we're dealing with. And that is what is wrong. That is what is wrong with our society, because we are not moving forward. We're not lifting up and helping our girls become women. See, I'm specifically talking about girls today. I've been accused in the past, Justina knows, that I talk about boys all the time. I'm a boy mom. I get that. I'm talking about girls today. I know when it happened for me, what my mother did, what my auntie did, what my grandmother did, they were providing support and encouragement for me. So I didn't feel shame, embarrassed. I didn't feel gross. I understood that my body biologically was changing, but mentally and emotionally, I was not a woman. And that's what we need to support them. So we have to line these things up. So when the caller says, well, no, being hypersexualized leads to pregnancy. No, no, no. Sex leads to pregnancy. Being hypersexualized does not lead to pregnancy. It doesn't. Hypersexualization may lead you to believe that you can participate in sex, but you can't get pregnant unless you're having sex, and we need to talk to children about that, too. We're one of the few societies where we're talking about getting rid of sex education. We're saying just say no. Just say no sounds good? What about the real conversations that we need to be having with our children about what this is involved in, what is entailed in doing this? We have Jaleel on the phone. Jaleel, how are you?
Got it. What's up? Greetings from Barangay Hotep. You know, in the final analysis, I think, and I hope, I wish, we hear more corrective. You see, everybody knows what the problems are, and we're constantly engaging in this, but let's get down to the real serious. In the final analysis, practice proves everything. Douglas said it best. If you want to know how much the oppressor will put on you, ask the oppressed how much they're willing to take. If we cannot build the institutions to protect, to define, defend, and protect that which is the most precious of our resources, which is our women, our nation, then nothing else is relevant. Nothing. So institution building, everybody is functioning, not everybody, excuse me, I stand corrected. Many people are functioning with the wrong views and values. If we're going to have a correction in our behavior, it's the old cliche, as a man thinketh, so is he or she. We have to build the institutions around, and the society cannot, we know the society on its elements are at fault. So the question will be, those people who participate in this capitalistic, imperialistic, hegemonic, devilish rule, on terms of the negatives, we then have to have correctives, and those correctives is building institutions. But our people have continuously rejected many of the views and the values that starts from the best practices of their culture. The best practice. I'm not talking about mainstream pop culture, but Malcolm said that we can't integrate into the mainstream because the mainstream is polluted. He said, you know, if you want to know what you'll do for my manhood, ask yourself what you'll do, multiply by 10. We've got to secure the front battle and take plant our flag in our own community in terms of those people who share views and values and build it. The Garvey movement was able to implant a certain consciousness. You know, everybody, all people we know have a great deal of self-esteem, individual self-esteem and respect to some degree. Some people would argue that, but collectively we have none. But other people, they have a collective consciousness about their views and values. Other people have said, I'm just using them as an example. I'm not using this for example that it speaks to our example, just for us to think about critically, is other religious groups have said, hey, we're not going to integrate into that mainstream. We're going to have our own stream.
Yeah.
So we constantly keep talking about these people, and we need to shun these views and values. Everybody needs to belong to a community, spiritual, cultural context of people who share your views and values. I'm a cultural nationalist, black nationalist. I adhere to, I am a Muslim. I believe in the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as an NOI member. Mm-hmm. I believe as Kaweeda values about the Nguzo Saba. These are my values. I raised my children, and I have produced the product of productive children and successful who have engaged in the best of our values because of the fact me and my wife, we sacrificed to bring this forth. We will not do that if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over. The correctives are hard. The work is hard, but it must be done.
Yes.
And everybody's not going to be saved.
No, I'm with you.
I'm reading about Jelani, the loss of this brother named Jelani out of Chicago. That will continue. We are in the midst of a war, and everybody's partying like there's nothing going on. But we have casualties all in the front and the rear. Paul Robeson said, there's no shelter in the front or rear.
Nope.
So let's get with our best of our views and values. So I would suggest, as a corrective, that people start taking a serious core look at the culture values of the philosophy called Kaweeda philosophy. Most people know it as Kwanzaa, the seven principles,
right, and the Nguzo Saba.
That's just a starting point. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jaleel. So folks, let me just throw this out here, and I appreciate what Jaleel was saying. I offer one corrective, if I may. I offer one corrective because in this particular aspect, I am not pointing the finger outward. Even though we know the media is the problem, the system is corrupt. We know we live in a system where white supremacy reigns here. We understand that black folks are not valued, brown bodies are not valued. I get all that. I'm now pointing the finger inward. I'm talking about us. What can we do to set up some hedges in our own home? Because we can have white supremacy outside. I don't have to bring it in through my TV. I don't have to bring it in through social media. I have to bring it in through the music. I can have some control over my household. Now, my husband and I, when my oldest son was born, I remember we made the decision. It was that day. We brought the baby home from the hospital. We were feeling really good. And in the next week or so, my husband got rid of the television. I was like, well, you got rid of the television? He said, because I don't want our son watching this television. He said, nope, what we're going to do, we're going to do reading. We're going to set up the household. There's enough to entertain him without television. Now, this is long before you had cell phones and the World Wide Web and all this stuff. We had email, but we didn't have the same kind of engagement we have today. When his brother came along, they grew up without television. That's not what we did. We had time on Saturday mornings. We went to the Enoch Pratt Library. You can get as many books as you want. We'll get you a snack and get you a reading corner. Time to go to bed. My sons were in the bed at 7:30. It's like, hey, 7:30, summertime as well. I mean, they should go, man, the sun is still out. That's fine. Close the curtains. It'll be nice and dark in your room. Routine, structure, consistency. You're not going to spend hours of your time sitting in front of a box designed to make you see yourself as less. And we did it every day, over and over again. And now my sons are in college, moving about the next step of their life. And my hope is that everything we poured into them will come back out. That's the hope. Because on the same token of the hyper-sexualization of girls, There's a hyper-masculinization of boys. Toxic masculinity. That's where we're going next. It's not just enough for girls to be objectified. Girls are seen as sexual beings. Girls are put on the line based upon what they look like. Along with teaching about the hypersexualization of girls, there's a hypermasculinization of boys. Raising boys in a system that promotes and tolerates and encourages toxic masculinity. How do your boys see girls? Because when they grow up, that's how they're going to, as men, see women. I remember my daddy used to always say, any man that you're going to marry, you need to look at how that man treats his mother. Because if he can mistreat the woman that carried him for 10 months, because really 40 weeks is 10 months. Let's be very clear, I was pregnant for 10 months, y'all. If he can mistreat the woman that brought him through, that gave him life, that carried him all the way through, that fed him when he couldn't do it himself, that changed him. If he can mistreat her, why wouldn't he mistreat you? That's all he was saying. 410-319-8888. I have Alaric on the phone. Alaric's a second-time caller from Columbia. How are you?
I am well, Dr. K. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
You know, there are, I got a couple of things to say about this, about what we're talking about. Now, I do believe that this is a problem that is both on both, I guess, the children as well as the parents. And I'm going to tell you why I say that. I don't know if you've ever been up on Pennsylvania Avenue. And if you have driven through Pennsylvania Avenue, mm-hmm. as I have, because I do drive Lyft, you see a lot of young girls that are out there that are dressed rather provocatively. Now, I know what, you know, and I know as a man, you know, and as, you know, even as a young boy, that, you know, okay, there are certain things that you just don't do. And one of them is to attack a woman or whatever. But, and I guess this might not, I don't know how, but sometimes when I look at that and I say, okay, now, like, if this were my son were out here, he would know well enough to be like, okay, hey, how you doing? And just kind of keep it moving like that. But you got some folks out there who don't, they look, they get fixated, and they got issues. I mean, so it's not always every single young man that does it, but we've got to do more, because I was there for my son, and I kind of let him know. It's like, you know what, that type of action or quality isn't good. When I was in college, there was a young lady. I was in my dorm room one night, and, you know, I heard a young lady kind of yell out. So I got up, and I went over and knocked on the door. Like, what's going on? And, you know, she left out the room, and I was like, look, dude, I told the occupants of the room, like, look, whatever y'all.
No, actually, I'm going to have to hold you there. Hey, I'm going to go take you out with the statistics here. 1 in 4 black girls will be sexually assaulted before the age of 18. 1 in 4. When we come back, the hypermasculinization of boys. Let's talk about that when we come back from the break. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. 1 in 4 black girls will be sexually assaulted before the age of 18. 1 in 4. And they make the argument, they as in people who do hypersexualization research, say, look, that part of this is because black girls and brown girls in particular, like I know we can talk about all other ethnic groups, and we're just specifically talking about black and brown girls right now are hypersexualized in our society. Now, we know that we can easily extend that. But I just want to focus for a second. I want to just talk to us just for a minute, because when we talk about what that means, there is a whole body of research called Black Women, the Forgotten Survivors of Sexual Assault. Black girls and women are at a disproportionate risk of sexual violence, and nobody is talking about it. In fact, Mika Kendall in her book, Hood Feminism, talks about how people have the idea that black women are unrapeable. Black girls are unrapeable. We're not pretty enough and dainty enough and pure enough to be raped. That if it happens to us, it's because we wanted it. It's because we were waiting for it. It's because we invited. It's because we were too fast. And this is what happens to fast girls. Hey, as I've said before, with something I saw on Twitter, and I'll say it again, no girl is fast enough for a man who's not attracted to girls. Let's be very clear. This adultification and hypersexualization of our girls needs to end. And I'm asking you, before you say, well, society is at fault, because society it is, right? We know society is at fault. I'm saying, what can we do? Listen to this. 1 in 5 black women are survivors of rape. 35% of black women experience some form of contact sexual violence during their lifetime. 40 to 60% of black women report being subjected to coercive sexual contact by age 18. Let's drill down for a second. Let's put a pin right here for just 1 minute. What exactly does that mean, coercive sexual contact? It's the grooming that takes place of our girls by men. That's what that is, that grooming, that, oh, baby, baby, please, you know you're beautiful. Let me give you a ride. Does your daddy know you're out here? Does your mommy know you're looking so good? We know the comments that some men make. Part of this hypersexualization of girls, making girls feel like they're women and they are not. When we participate in this, we are only adding to the trauma that our girls are going through. 17% of black women experience sexual violence other than rape by intimate partner during that lifetime. For every black woman and girl who reports rape, at least 15 black women and girls do not report. Black and brown girls are the least believed when we talk about sexual violence. Let's keep going, because it doesn't stop there. Like, we talk about hypersexualization, when the daddy called and said, no, no, it leads to pregnancy. Well, let's talk about some other things it leads to that research backs up, like sexual violence, like the fact that girls are not, black girls and brown girls are not believed when they talk about the fact that they've been assaulted, harassed, or raped. More than 20% of black women are raped during their lifetimes, a higher share than any other women overall. More black women are raped disproportionately than any other racial or ethnic group in this country. Black women are 2.5 times more likely to be murdered by men than their white counterparts. Black women and girls get killed more by our men. I'm just laying out the facts. You don't have to believe me. And maybe you can push back against the research. Let me tell you where the research is coming from, because I like to just be honest, because people think I'm just making stuff up. No, the research is coming from the Institute for Women's Policy Research. And what the Institute for Women's Policy Research does is they pull the numbers, and they've been doing it for 8 decades now, pulling the numbers about black women and sexual violence. That we need to keep putting this down. There's actually a center, the National Center on Violence Against Women in the Black Community. It's actually a center. And what they do is they fight for black women's bodies and agency, and they fight against white supremacist rape and assault. They fight against black men who put their hands on black women and girls. All of this, this movement to try to protect black girls, actually, very interestingly, came out of the civil rights movement. Now, if you were to go back and talk to some of the leaders of the civil rights movement, I'm not talking about the brothers, right? The pastors of the civil rights movement. All men, by the way. No. If you go back and you listen to how Nikki Giovanni and how Dorothy Eyhite and how Angela Davis talk about the civil rights movement, like you really open up your ear to Alice Walker, you really open up and you listen to how everybody but Rosa Parks, because she didn't really go down this aisle, you just listen to how Ella Baker talked about the real civil rights movement beyond the marching. Hear me. On the front line, we were united, arm in arm. Men in their suits, women in their dresses and their hats and their makeup. We're all locked arms, all going to prison together, all being lifted up behind the scenes. Black women talked about how black men deliberately and intentionally kept them from positions of power. Nikki Giovanni talks about this. They only wanted darker-skinned sisters on the front row. Light-skinned sisters weren't allowed until late that night, right? And they were knocking on your door. Out of that movement, black women during the civil rights movement said, look, we need to have another movement when we talk about civil rights. It's not just about being able to sit on the front of the bus. It's not just about being able to go whatever school we want to go to. It's not just about that. It's not just about eating at a restaurant. Like, seriously, it's not just about that. We're talking about having true equality, equity, and body autonomy. And that, for black women, begins with us being free and safe. Black women demanded control over their bodies and their lives. They wanted to stand up and say the NAACP, the Civil Rights Movement, CORE, SCLC, SNCC, all of them need to step up and fight for black women's bodies and agencies and against white supremacist rape and assault. Black women, as I noted, are 2.5 times more likely to be murdered by men than their white counterparts. Adding to that, more than 9 in 10 black female victims knew their killers. So what does that mean? It means not only are we more likely to be killed by men, we're more likely to be killed by men who are already a part of our life. Think about that. That's something that should give you a chill and a pause. We're not only more likely to be killed by men, 2.5 times more likely, we're also more likely to be killed by men we know. 9 out of 10 black female victims knew their killers. Here's another piece of information that should get you going. Black women also experience significantly higher rates of psychological abuse. This is where I want to stop, right? Because we began by talking about the hypersexualization of black girls. I want to move into a layered two-part conversation. One part is about toxic masculinity, the hypermasculinization of boys, raising our boys to be this old school definition of a man, right? Go off to work, come home, got the woman waiting on you hand and foot, bringing you your food, and you're just sitting back saying whatever you want to say, doing whatever you want to do, not respecting the woman who is at the table with you. Notice I didn't say your woman, because that's part of the problem too, right? Black women with this psychological abuse, we are more likely to experience humiliation, insults, name calling, and coercive control. We experience it more than any other race or ethnic group. We experience that. So this struggle to protect black girls and women is one that is ongoing. part of the reason that is so difficult, this systemic oppression that Black women experience based upon our race and our gender, is because it's not only are we not respected in the greater society, we got some issues of respect going on in our own community. Zora Simone asked a question that I was getting ready to ask. She said, why does society, men and some African-American men, hate us? Why do Black men, not all of them, it may not be you, if I'm not talking about you, don't take it personal. I'm saying it feels like we have been conditioned. And so we're playing out our conditioning where Black men hate Black women, and Black women hate Black men, and Black men and Black women hate anyone who wants to push against the notion of having just two direct genders. The hatred in our community is also what holds us back. There's this notion of the strong Black woman and the angry Black woman that, you know, is our strength and our perseverance and our sense of survival and our arrogance that keeps Black men from taking a hard look at how we have emotional needs, at our tenderness, at our humanity, and about the fact that some of us, maybe all of us, need the protection of Black men in our community. I don't know where you feel about that. 410-319-8888. Is it incumbent upon men? I'm asking all men that when we start talking about protecting our community, protecting, sheltering, supporting Black women and Black girls, is that something that we need to start seriously taking a hard look at? Because maybe when we start talking about dismantling the master's house with the master's tools, we can start dismantling the way that the master's mindset has become our mindset. Black women are rarely protected. And here's some hardcore examples. I just want to throw some out here while you are getting your ideas together so you can call. Because Lolly Young Marcus put out here, Tupac talked about how he felt our leaders had left his mom behind. He also noted that hurt people hurt people. So we have to find this, stop it, and break it. Here are the ways in which Black women are rarely protected. I say this because our Black girls look up and see what's happening to Black women, knowing that at one day, at one point, they will become a Black woman. Like, our children are witnessing the ways in which Black women are not protected, not respected, not believed, not given the space to be human. That we have to be the strong Black woman because we are the angry Black woman. And that is part and parcel for the wear and tear of what Black women have to deal with. Here are a couple of examples. And I call you and I'm asking you, what can we do about this? What do you think we can do in terms of the ways in which society treats and positions Black women and Black girls? Here's one. A Tatiana Coquise Jefferson. Remember her? A 28-year-old Black woman. She was shot and killed in her home by a white American police officer in Fort Worth, Texas. Remember, she was playing games with her nephew, sitting up in the house, had her door open, and a Black neighbor, a man, said, oh, something must be wrong. I want to have a wellness check done. I wonder what would have happened if Brother Man had just walked over to the house and yelled out, Tatiana, girl, you all right? I mean, I don't understand why that wasn't an option. No, Brother Man said, let me call the cops and ask the cops to come over and do a wellness check for Tatiana Jefferson because something's going on. What happened to the old days of us looking out for people in our own community? Nevertheless, he called the cops. The cops showed up for a wellness test. She's in there checking, when they're playing video games with her nephew. Cops around the house, shoot through the window, shot and killed her in her own home playing video games with her nephew. Rakia Boyd, hanging out with her friends at a park, Rakia Boyd was shot in the back of the head and killed by Dante Servin, an off-duty Chicago detective. Shot this black girl. She was hanging out with her friends. They weren't doing anything. They were at the park. Here's one, Renisha McBride. She knocked on the door to seek help after a car crash. She was in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. She knocked on the door of a house owned by Theodore Wafer, who shot her with a shotgun because he thought she was breaking into his house. Girlfriend, her car broke down. There was a car crash. The car wouldn't start. She walks to a house. She knocks on the door trying to get help. He thought she was trying to break in her house. She's knocking at the door. He grabs his shotgun, shoots and kills her. Renisha McBride. A couple more. Corinne Gaines. Corinne Gaines was shot and killed while holding her son. She was shot by a SWAT team in Baltimore County. Remember that? They were trying to serve her a warrant for a traffic violation. They ended up shooting and killing her in her own home. A bullet ricocheted and caught her son in the ear. Maybe he was in the hospital. That's the case that's being handled right now. They're arguing about the Corinne Gaines case right now, talking about it. Here's another one. Kira Johnson. While giving birth to a child, Kira Johnson experienced severe medical negligence during her routine C-section. She said she was in pain. She said something wasn't right. She says, I need help. And the doctors did not believe her. Let's put a pin right here for just a second, because we understand in America, black women, black people in the whole, black women specifically, are not believed when it comes to our own health. If you want another example, maybe you don't know Kira Johnson. Do you know Serena Williams? Because Serena said she was telling her doctor, hey, something's not right with my body. And the doctor said, no, you're good. Serena, she almost died. Beyonce giving birth. The doctor's like, you don't know. I got your body. She almost died. How about the black woman whose name I cannot remember? The black woman who died back in December of COVID-19. The doctor who said, look, I know something's wrong, and she wasn't believed. Kira Johnson died. This idea that black women and black girls are not protected. Let me give you two more, and then I'm going to take your phone calls. Drinking milk from a school cafeteria. While she was sitting at a table drinking milk, the cops came in because they were called by the lunch lady and told that this little 11-year-old girl had stolen milk. 11 years old. She has special needs. They said, she's stolen some milk. Come in here. The cops rushed into the cafeteria, picked her up, and body slammed her because the lunch lady said she had stolen some milk. Hear me out. Little black girl. Last one, Jasmine Headley. She was sitting on the floor with her child in a crowded supplemental nutrition assistance program. She was violently separated from her child by four police officers and arrested by the police because she was upset at the security guard because they were out of chairs. She asked the security guard for a chair. The guard said no. She said, well, that's your job. She was like, look, you need to go get some chairs in here. She sat down on the floor. He called the cops. Cops came in, yanked her from her child, and arrested her because she was complaining about not having a place to sit. Jasmine Headley. Black women and girls, maybe we need to talk about how we have been conditioned to believe that they are okay when they are not. We have Kadria on the phone from West Baltimore. Kadria, how are you?
Well, you know, I could feel better. Lord have mercy. I'd like to feel better. I guess it just ain't the time. Dr. K, you know, this is a real long-seated problem. I'm going to tell you where I take this thing from. Separation of the male and female during slavery and the access that the white man had to the black female anytime he wanted. Just imagine, it might have been right in front of your own father's face. He came and took your virgin girl because, you know, Nobody was allowed to break the black virgins in except the master or his people, okay? Imagine the castration of black men suffered mentally. And this, to me, is what set up that enmity that still to this day exists between us, okay?
Thank you so much, Kadria. I appreciate you. This idea of this separation between black women and black men, maybe it's something that continues. Wayne Duncan said, the black woman I'm talking about, the doctor who died of COVID-19 back in December, was Dr. Susan Moore. Thank you, Wayne. Susan Moore, I remember. Here she is. She's a doctor, a medical doctor in the hospital, telling her colleagues, look, something's wrong with me. And she said, what? Because she videotaped all this and put it out on Facebook. She said her colleague, her white male colleague, thought maybe she was trying to get some extra drugs, that she was a drug addict. Here she is. She said, I've been working at this hospital for 18, 20 years. They think I'm a drug addict. I'm laying up here with COVID. She had to leave that hospital, go to another hospital, trying to get help. She ended up dying. This notion of not being believed, when you look at how black women are treated, black women have the highest rate of maternal mortality among black women. I'm sorry, black women have the highest rate of maternal mortality among all women. We are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth than white women. We have more black women dying today than during the latter half of slavery. 410-319-8888. Alan's on the phone from Maryland. Alan, how are you? Do you have time for more phone call? All right, Alan, hold on. We'll get to you after the break. Folks, stay with us. We're going to finish up this conversation, and I have to play for you my conversation with Mayor Brandon Scott from yesterday. So we'll have our conversation, and we'll end the show with my conversation with Mayor Scott. Stay with us after the break. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Let's go to Alan from Maryland to pick up our conversation on the lack of protection against for black women that starts early and is what our black girls see growing up. Alan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm good. Thank you. I just wanted to add that that I think that, you know, I just want to add a different way of looking at this.
Okay.
I think that the problem is that, you know, you have the lack of power that black men have to protect black women and young girls. I think that, you know, when we go into dangerous territory, when we're running around saying things like toxic masculinity, when, you know, I don't think the problem is that masculinity is toxic. I think the problem is that we don't have enough masculinity happening at all. Mm. That's just what I wanted to add to the conversation.
I appreciate that. But now, how do we teach that? Let me ask you. So if there's not enough masculinity, how do we teach our boys to be men? Like, what does that consist of? I know that there are a number of people, Ray Winbush, Daryl Lamar Shields, that do things like a rite of passage. Is that what we're talking about?
I don't believe in menial ceremonies. I think that what you need is people, black men, to be present and to be showing to not just be present, but then to be, you know, hopefully having more homes intact and to having situations where men are able to provide for not just their own families, but for the communities economically. Until we as black men are able to provide an economic base for our communities, none of these problems are going to be solved.
But then the question is, if we do something different in terms of trying to help our boys become men and help our girls become women, what do you see long term as what success would look like for us?
Success looks like I said, having intact homes. I truly believe that you have to have we have to have a higher rate of families intact. Our rate is entirely too low. We're just not making it as families, and when we don't make it as families, we can't really make it as a community, especially when you're coming from a deficit as we are based on historical factors.
All right, thank you so much, Alan. I appreciate you. I want to put on the table, now that Alan has raised us in terms of raising our boys to be men, we spend a lot of time talking about the hypersexualization of girls. And then we moved into talking about how Black women are the least protected. Isn't that what Malcolm X said? Least protected, least respected, least listened to women in our society. And it was true in Malcolm X's day, and I'm going to argue it's probably as true, if not more, today. I want to delve into toxic masculinity, where we are raising our boys to believe that they are supposed to dominate the culture, that we're raising them so they are misogynistic, that they are homophobic, that they are watching and or participating in sexual assault or domestic violence. The socialization of boys in this kind of patriarchal society normalizes violence, such as saying boys will be boys, normalizing bullying and aggression. This notion that by helping boys to be, quote, strong men, that's what we're saying, we want them to be a strong man, okay. What does that look like? Toxic masculinity in boys actually leads to depression, increased stress, and substance use disorders. It actually has an emotional impact, a mental impact, a psychological impact on the development of boys. It is this notion that we are setting them up to be, quote, real men, by helping them to deny their feelings. Kim Fuller on Facebook Live says, look, masculinity does not necessarily dictate strength. I know many Black men who are cool, quiet, and strong as strong can be. We need a clear definition of masculinity. I believe that the term masculinity equates to being macho, domineering. Folks, we're raising our boys to believe that in order for them to take their rightful place, wherever that place is, we're into the mythopoetic men's movement. Mythopoetic. You got to be a strong man. You got to make your voice heard. You need to, if necessary, lay hands on children. Come on. So you can be the focus of the house. They said many times, and this is going back to the time of Jim Crow, that because Black men were not respected in the greater society, then when they came home, that's when they put their foot down. They wanted respect at home. You want respect from those that you can terrorize. You can have them fear you. And I'm not saying all men. No way am I saying all men at all. I'm just saying this is part of what toxic masculinity looks like and part of what we're trying to fight against in our society. The ways in which our boys are being raised to believe that they have to dominate other men through violence. They have to avoid the appearance of either femininity or weakness. You can't cry. Suck it up. Be a man. It's kind of this unspoken code. You know what's interesting? And this might get the men, so I want to talk to the men for a second. The research around toxic masculinity, guess where that research started? Hear me. This is very interesting. The toxic masculinity research actually started in prison as a research study, talking about the unspoken code among prisoners and how they have to suppress their vulnerable emotions so they can cope with the harsh conditions of prison life defined by punishment, social isolation, and aggression. We've taken that idea and we put it right in society. We're raising our boys to be men in this old-fashioned 1950s era style definition of men, which is what we have to work against. Hypersexualization of girls, hypermasculinization of boys. Now, I know we're going to go shortly to my interview with the mayor. I'm waiting for Justina to give me the cue of when we're going to do that. I challenge you, parents, to think deeply about how you are raising your children. I am not in your household. I'm not trying to tell you how to do it. I'm just asking you to think about it. You're the only catcher in the rye over your household. If you don't protect the borders, then who will? If you don't make sure this what's coming into your house is what is approved by what's in your house, then you might want to step back and take another look. You are the one who is responsible. You are the one that will have to answer. When I hear what a mother said, and Justine, you can hand me the name of the young boy. He was the one that was in the car that killed that police officer, that female police officer. When the mother said, well, I asked the courts to take him because I didn't know what to do with him. You know what, mamas? You know what, daddies? Before we ask the courts to take our children because we can't do anything about them, we need to check ourselves. That was Dante. What are we doing? I should not have to turn my child over to the mass industrial prison complex to take care of my child because I don't know what to do. I'm throwing my hands up. Just saying. In order for things to be different, we have to be different. We have to do something differently. Melissa says, I think much of these toxic, aggressive responses come from insecurity. We need to make sure that there's intellect and hope in our children. The security in themselves is a game changer. Kevin's on the line. Kevin, how are you? Kevin, how you doing? All right, I think we have lost Kevin. That young gentleman I was talking about was Dante Harris. I know I cannot be the only one whose heart was broken listening to that mother cry and say, look, I asked them, take my son from me because I don't know what to do. I was just thinking about her the other day. I said, I really wish that there was like a system set up in our community, like brothers set up to help. So when a mom says, look, I got to throw my hands up, that there are a group of men saying, you know what, we can help.